13. By the time Gideon got back to the hacienda at a little after 7 p.m., dinner was problematic. Tony and Preciosa had gone to a concert in Oaxaca, so there was no obligatory family meal in the Casa del Mayordomo. And at the request of the women professors, some of whom were also going into the city, Dorotea had served dinner at 5:30 and started cleaning up with her nieces at 6:45. When Gideon and Julie peeked into the kitchen to see what the situation was, Dorotea, up to her roughened elbows in suds and dirty dishes, glared challengingly up at them. Words were not necessary. The look spoke for itself. "Just you dare and ask me to cook up something especially for you." "What now?" Gideon asked once they had backed apologetically out.
"Well, there are two sit-down restaurants in the village, but they won't be seating anybody as late as this. They're mostly there for day trippers. But Jamie told me about a new place. Well, not a place exactly. They set up a bunch of tables on the sidewalk in front of the village market, across from the church. The food's supposed to be great."
"Sounds good to me. Can we walk there?"
"Oh, sure. It's practically at the bottom of the hill, right in the middle of town. It's called Hamburguesas."
"Hamburguesas?" This was the Spanish word for hamburgers.
"No, Hamburguesas. It's a pun. The guy who does it, his name is Sam, and he serves..."
"Hamburgers, I get it. Okay, let's go. I guess I'm about ready for a burger." If there was anything that passed for nightlife in Teotitlan, it had to be Hamburguesas, which was jammed with laughing, gossiping people, happy to have an excuse to be out in the fresh air on a warm December evening. The place was like a cross-section of Teotitlan society. There were grizzled, mustachioed, solitary old shepherds or farmers in from the hills, in sombreros and loose white working clothes, trendier young weavers in plaid shirts and designer jeans, and groups of young and old women, almost all in traditional dress, with their hair in long braids down their backs, and wearing huipiles, wrap-around, apron-like tunics, over their house dresses, and rebozos, wide, multicolored cotton shawls, draped over their shoulders. Many of the younger ones used their rebozos as little hammocks in which to carry sleeping infants. A little away from the crowd, on the grass of the church plaza across the street, were the teenage boys and girls, mostly, like teenagers anywhere, hanging around and eyeing each other from same-sexed groups, the boys unconvincingly cocky and show-offy, the girls flirty and giggling. A few of the luckier ones had already paired off and were lounging on the grass farther away and out of the light. Sam, they presumed he was Sam, operated from a stand under an awning on the side of the market building, serving hamburguesas and tacos as fast as he could make them, at 5 pesos each, about 50 cents. Despite the name of the place, almost everyone at Hamburguesas was opting for the tacos al pastor, which smelled and looked heavenly, and Gideon and Julie did the same. Sam would deftly shave marinated pork from the sides of a trompo, a top-shaped vertical spit, like the Middle Eastern roasters used to cook gyro meat. Laid over 2 stacked, warm, freshly made corn tortillas, and neatly topped the whole with a slice of grilled pineapple. With their paper plates of tacos in one hand and warmish cans of Mexico's most popular soft drink, Coca-Cola, in the other, they managed to snag a newly vacated folding table facing the old church tower, now floodlit as the night grew darker. Gideon cleared the table of the previous diner's leavings, came back, and sat down.
"Did you see Tony today?"
he asked while they used plastic spoons to lay on condiments from the platter on the table. Cilantro, lime, salsa, guacamole, chiles.
"It seems he owes you an apology for last night. I was wondering if he made it."
"Yes, you said that before. No, I didn't see him, but if I did, I wouldn't expect one. He flies off the handle once in a while, but basically he's a good guy. He just..."
"Takes a little getting used to, yeah. You said that before. I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it as far as I'm concerned. Here you are, using your vacation time to help out."
"Oh, Gideon, I appreciate your taking offense on my behalf, but I really think you're overreacting. Some of your academic-type friends take some serious getting used to, too. Audrey, for one, or Norton, or the huge one with the pince-nez.
Well, yes, that's true enough.
Or if you want to talk about really creepy, what about Harvey? My God. Or Lyle?
But that's different there. He laughed. Okay, point taken. I'll take Tony as he is.
For a while, they busied themselves with their seriously overloaded tacos, the eating of which required the use of both hands, all of their focus, and the copious application of paper napkins, which were soon piled in a messy clump in the middle of the table. Oh, I have a little bit of news, Julie said, when they paused to wipe their chins and take a couple of breaths. Annie's going to be back tomorrow morning. They settled on the divorce agreement in one day. She said, and I'm quoting, El Schmucko didn't have enough to make it worth fighting about. She also said, he sure doesn't look like Robert Redford anymore. That last was said with a certain amount of satisfaction, I should add.
Good for Annie. But what does that mean for us? Are we going to be heading home?
Well, they said we were welcome to stay as long as we want, of course. But I think we should stick to our original plan, go home at the end of the week.
That's fine with me. So then are you going to be free for the next few days? Can we do some touring?
Not altogether, no, I... Oops, she leaned quickly forward, as a strip of salsa-drenched pork disengaged itself from the taco and plopped onto the table. Another napkin was produced from the dispenser to clean it up. I promised to help Jamie with the quarterly accounts. I guess Annie is hopeless at that kind of thing, even worse than I am. But he says we can probably wrap it up in a couple of mornings, maybe only one. So I'm hoping to be available, yes, but not until tomorrow afternoon anyway.
That works out perfectly, said Gideon. I need to write up a report for Marmalejo in the morning on those bones I was working on today. I know what, maybe we can drop it off personally. I know he'd like to see you. And then continue on into downtown Oaxaca, have lunch out maybe. There are supposed to be some first-rate restaurants.
Maybe, said Julie, wiping her chin. But I bet they won't be as good as San Borghese's.
You're probably right. He swigged some Coke from the can and got up. I'm still hungry. I'm going to get another taco. Want one? My treat. You can buy tomorrow.
After dinner, they walked contentedly back up to the hacienda in the dark, their flashlight throwing weird, flitting shadows on the adobe brick and concrete block walls that lined the steep alley. What did you think of Preciosa? Julie asked out of nowhere.
Preciosa? I don't know. Seemed okay to me. A little strange, maybe. And I can understand why Annie calls her Preciosa the Pretentious.
How old would you say she is?
Julie, Gideon had learned, had a bit of an obsession about women who employed facelifts, dermabrasion, Botox, and the rest of the anti-aging arsenal in their own obsessive, futile pursuit of staying young forever. The idea of it simply irked her. She didn't like to see them getting away with it when she herself was honestly taking age as it came. It also irked her that Gideon typically couldn't spot a facelift when he saw one. So when she asked him that particular question, how old would you say she is? In that particular tone of voice, it was inevitably with the purpose of setting him straight about some artificially enhanced actress or acquaintance that she thought might have him fooled.
Preciosa, he said. Oh, late 50s, maybe 60 or so.
She was surprised. I would have thought you'd have said 30s or 40s.
Are you kidding? No way, he said, then added, the hands. You can always tell from the hands.